Welcome to A Slob Comes Clean, the podcast. I am Dana K. White. I share my personal deslobification process as I figure out ways to keep my own home under control. I share the truth about cleaning and organizing strategies that actually work in real life for real people, people who don't love cleaning and organizing. Thanks for joining me today. This is podcast number 384, and I'm going to call it Talking About Goals with John Acuff. So John Acuff is someone who I have followed for a long time. My husband actually was the one who started following him years ago. And I'm excited to have him on the show talking about goals today. But one thing that he casually mentioned as an example in our conversation, which full disclosure, we had this before last summer. But one of the things that he casually mentioned was his own fears over hiring someone. And that is just one of those things that's, you know, kind of played in my brain, as that is something I have been thinking a lot about. So kind of fits that this is the episode where I mentioned to you that I am hiring. So I know ultimately this is only going to apply to maybe one of you, right? But I did want to just let you know that we're hiring. And so if you think you might be the right person, go check it out. So I have amazing people who work for me, but we're looking for a virtual office manager. That's what we're calling it. We thought about calling it like detail juggler or chief follow through officer. But if you think that you might be the right person for this position, go to aslobcomesclean.com/hiring to see the job description and find out how to apply. Couple other things really quickly. Take Your House Back is on sale through September 20th for $94. Go to aslobcomesclean.com/take. And don't forget too that we are running a 10 years of the podcast giveaway. If you go to aslobcomesclean.com/10 years, T-E-N-Y-E-A-R-S, okay? If you go there, you'll find out how to enter by sharing on your own social media how long you've been listening to the podcast and what you like about it, and then entering there. But the prize for that is, which one person will be chosen at random, but the prize is 2 hours of decluttering coaching from one of my certified decluttering coaches. So if you go to decluttering coaches.com, you see all of my coaches who are certified in my no mess decluttering process. Okay. And you can pick one of those coaches. If there's not one who's available to actually help you in your home, so many of them do virtual coaching as well. So you'll definitely be able to find someone to work with you. Anyway, 2 hours of coaching, you'll arrange it, and then I will pay them for their time.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, let's get to the conversation with John Acuff. John Acuff, you're on my podcast. I'm excited.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think this is going to be fun.
It is. So let's talk about goals, because that's what your new book is about, right? That comes out here very, very soon. But before we do that, I want to know about you, because I know who you are. And I can't believe you don't remember when we met at one of your speaking events and took a picture together. Like, I just can't believe that.
Which event was it?
It was Blistem in Dallas.
Oh, Blistem Dallas was probably 9 years ago. That was a long time ago. Yeah. Blistem. I love Allie Worthington. I'm such a big Allie fan. She lives here in Nashville where I live. So yeah, that I loved that event. I spoke at the one in Dallas. It was at the Gaylord, right? Yes. And then the one in Nashville too. So yeah, I was a huge, I don't know if the Dallas one was the one where I admitted I had a Spanx on during the speech.
Yeah, you did. I remember that very clearly.
I remembered. Yeah, that I remember.
So that was not just a standard joke for every single.
No. That's why I remember it. No, I'm never like, if I'm at Range Rover speaking to their team, I'm never like, hey, I got a Spanx on. Yeah, no, that was a one and done.
But I think I went home thinking, I didn't know men could wear Spanx. Honey, do you want some Spanx? I asked my husband and he said, no, it was strange.
A stylist told me you're so wrinkled on stage. Like you're so, and I have no idea and like how I'm right. presenting. And so they said, if you're going to speak in a sweater or a certain type of shirt, put a Spanx on below it so that it hides all the wrinkles on like a regular undershirt. And I was like, I'll receive that feedback. I'll learn from anybody. If a stylist wants to tell me I look sloppy, all right, let's figure that out.
Let's do it. That's always there for the help. So, yeah. Okay. So I know who you are, but you tell my audience who you are.
Well, my name is John. I live in Nashville, Tennessee. I've got two teenage daughters. I've been married to my wife, Jenny, for 22 years. And my background, I grew up writing, meaning that I majored in journalism. I spent about 15 years in corporate America writing advertising and marketing for companies like Home Depot and Bose and Staples. And then I started a website on the side of life, like a lot of people start things on the side of life. And that started to grow over time. It wasn't fast. It wasn't instant by any means. But that slowly became what I do full time now, which is write books and talk about the books. And my books are based around pursuing goals in your life. So one was called Finish, about finishing goals. One is called Start. Guess what? That one was about starting goals. And then I'll take topics that I see getting in the way of goals. Like my last book was called Soundtracks. So it was about mindset because I kept seeing people that they knew what to do. They had it all laid out. It wasn't that it was complicated, but they had all this overthinking that got in the way and they didn't have a mindset that helped them actually do the thing they wanted to do. So I wrote a book about mindset and how it applies to goals.
So specifically, this one is called All It Takes Is a Goal. Mm-hmm.
All It Takes Is a Goal.
3-step plan. I love a 3-step plan. Yep. To ditch regret and tap into your massive potential. I have to ask as an author, did you write the title? Was it
yes.
your title?
Yes.
Whole thing.
Well, All It Takes Is a Goal. That title was I have a podcast called All It Takes Is a Goal. And it was the title exercise for this one was we went around and around and around and around. And it was one of those moments where it was like, I think we already have the title. I think this is the title. For me, I learned $1 million titling lesson on a book called Do Over. And I'll tell anybody who wants to write a book, this is just, please, please, please learn this for free because it costs me a lot of money. People don't want to have a negative title. People don't like to identify with negativity. So I had a book called Do Over, which is about job transition. I was going through a job transition. A lot of people were. And I thought it was positive, rise from the ashes, the phoenix. And people who saw it read it as, hey, failure. So you failed and you need to start again. And no one would give that book to anybody. Like no one would go, hey, this is a book about people who have wrecked their life. It's called Do Over. Do you want to read it? Like no wife would give that to a husband. It's like when somebody goes, oh, I heard somebody, you know, speak about anger. I got you a book to read, sweetheart. It's about rage. Like just going to put it on your nightstand. And so with Finish, my next book, the initial subtitle was Stop Making Perfect the Enemy of Done. And we like stop, enemy, nope, negative. We changed the subtitle to Give Yourself the Gift of Done. And it sold 3 times as many as Do Over. And so I'm a big believer in, okay, how do you have a positive title that's sticky, that's easy to remember? That's how I think about titles.
I'm all about the long titles, but whatever.
What's your favorite title?
Of mine?
Yeah.
Decluttering at the Speed of Life.
That's good. It's good. Yeah.
But, you know, they always tell me I can't have my title because it's going to be too long. And then I always get it, you know? Yeah. So I'm like, eh.
Well, and you're the one that's going to stand next to it for years and years and years and years and years.
Like, but I do know, like with my last book, not that it's done as well as Decluttering the Speed of Life, but I, you know, my website, my podcast is called The Slob Comes Clean, which is a negative word. I mean, it just is, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things I talk about a lot, but it's also part of it. Like it's part of the story and it reaches the actual, you know,
so it's a transformation. It's okay if it's negative, if there's a transformation, like if the title of the book was Slob, nobody's going to go, oh, that's right. Me. I want to carry a book that says slob around, like, but a slob comes clean. It has life transformation.
But it does present challenges. You're very right in that, you know, but with the last book I said, hey, can we put on the cover instead of creator of A Slob Comes Clean, like the other ones do, put author of Decluttering at the Speed of Life, which is the one that has done the best, you know? So it's let's change that little wording there because it was from the gift book division. And so I'm like, well, nobody's going to give somebody a book that says slob on it, you know? So anyway,
Yeah. So we could geek out about little writer things all the time. I love that.
But it's a mindset shift. It really is. Mm-hmm. You know, and I do have to be honest. I thought you were going to say that it was because the website was Duver.com.
No. I couldn't even get the URL. Somebody already had the URL. So that one, no, it was that, like, we changed the subtitle when we did the soft cover version. Like, we tried to fix it. And it was my title. Like, it wasn't like, oh, the publisher made a mistake. I was the one who was like, this is the title. This is the title. Like, it was just, I just learned the lesson. I learned the lesson about, like, people. The way I think about it now is, like, you pitch the solution on the cover and you fix the problem inside. Like, that's the mindset shift. Good. And it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to fix the heck out of it inside. But if I overdo the pain on the cover, people don't. Now, there's always exceptions, of course. But I think in general, especially Americans, don't like to identify with a problem. Even if their house is on fire, they're like, no, it's fine. It just keeps me warm. And you're like, we are a culture that lives largely in denial. And so saying a problem as the only like source of information, I just don't think people identify with it.
Let's talk about denial.
Yeah,
I mean, where does denial come in this all it takes is a goal? Like, where does that factor in you helping people break through that denial? Because I feel like that's a lot of what I help people do here, you know, is like denial of what I thought I was going to be, what I thought I was going to need, what I thought I was going to make use of all this time. And now I'm just going to have to stick it in a donate box. So like, where is denial a factor in goal setting?
So the book started with the story, and all my books start with something that I have an experience, and then I go, wow, I need to dig deeper into this. And then I go, do other people need this? Like, I look at three things when I write a book: a personal passion, because you're going to talk about it for years. The reason this podcast has over 300 episodes is you're personally connected to this topic. This isn't a topic for you that you had 50 different topics and this is the one that took off. So you're like, fine, I'll talk about, like, this is a passion for you. Yeah. Second thing is, do people actually need it? Do I see a need for it? And third is there a spot for me in the marketplace? Is there somewhere that I can fit in with this idea in a unique way? So with this book, the passion was, we're standing on a college campus that my wife and I both attended, Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama. We're there to tour my daughter, my oldest daughter. And my wife said, wasn't college the best? It was amazing. And I was having the opposite experience. I was remembering all the ways I wasted my potential, all the mistakes. I was just a mess in college. And driving home, I started to kind of process that. And I'd just written soundtracks. And so soundtracks teaches three questions that you ask broken soundtracks. Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it kind? It was true. It's 100% true. I wasted college. It is. It's just, that's just factually true. Is it helpful for me to say that to myself again and again and again and again and beat myself up with that and live in the shame of that? Of course not. Is it kind? Of course not. So I had to say, okay, I didn't make the most of college. What do I do going forward? Like, that was 4 years. Let's say I live 40 more years. What can I do with that? And so I think where denial comes in is denial doesn't even admit it hurts. Like, you first have to feel you have to process that. Our culture says garbage motivational stuff. Like, you should be fearless. You can find some way to be fearless. And I don't agree with that at all. Because every time you do something new, every time you declutter some new thing or new challenge, there's fear involved because you've never done it. And there should be. Now, the soundtrack I use is that fear gets a voice, not a vote. It has a voice. I learned from it. You can't be fully self-aware if you deny fear. Like, I learned from it, but it doesn't get a vote in the sense of it doesn't get to tell me what I'm going to do or what I'm not going to do. So for me, that's where the book started. And denial is in every step of a goal of I want something. There are people who are divorced from desire. Like, the study we did, there's a PhD named Mike Peasley who helps me with research. We asked 3,000 people if they feel like they're living up to the potential. 96% said no. So this is an everyone problem. There, I've got my box mark need checked. Mm-hmm. And then 50% of them said that 50% of their potential is untapped. So that's like only opening half your Christmas presents every year. Like, imagine you come downstairs, there's a pile in the corner. You even have friends and family members that are going, we see something in you, like, go over there. You can open those, and you don't open them. And people get disconnected and divorced from their desire. They can't admit that. Where moms struggle with denial, at least, because my audience is 75% female. So like, that's who I'm talking to. They'll say, well, I can't work on a goal because that's selfish. Like, I've got to give everything I have to my kids. And if I pause for just the briefest of moments, that's selfish. And so I'm going to deny this desire I have to declutter or build a business or launch a podcast. And so, yeah, denial is woven throughout goals. It's one of the things you have to deal with as you continue to work on goals.
What's your first step of your three-step process?
Yeah. So the first step, the book kind of breaks it down that the challenge is most people float between one of three performance zones. They're either in the comfort zone, so they're kind of stuck. Then they get inspired often, especially around January. They get inspired, and so they try to do everything, and they go right over to the chaos zone. So this would be in a decluttering sense. Okay, I want to declutter. I got inspired by a book I read or a podcast, and so I immediately went to the Container Store and I spent $300, and I'm gonna organize down to the toothbrush level.
So you mean they didn't read my book? Okay, no. That's the number one problem.
Exactly. Yeah, there's chaos. So they go to the chaos zone, they try to do everything, it falls apart. And in between that is the potential zone, where it's kind of like the Goldilocks zone. It's not too much, it's not too little. You make sustainable, long-term decisions that give you sustainable change. And so the first step is, how do you create an easy goal? Like, an easy goal helps you escape the comfort zone. So how you build at yourself an easy goal. Step two is you build yourself a middle goal. It's kind of, think about a ladder, and one rail says time and one says effort. A lot of people try to jump and grab the top rail and they go, why did I fail? And you go, well, you've never run and you signed up for a marathon next week because you heard an Eminem song. You got inspired. That's not sustainable. And so you build a middle goal, which increases it. And then you build, the last step is what I call a guaranteed goal, where you've now have enough effort, enough time, enough repetition to actually go, okay, this is going to happen. Like, I've got this in motion. So those are the three steps, is you really figure out three different types of goals.
Y'all know how much I love summer, and summer's coming. I definitely like to get a few new fun summertime pieces. So I really try to follow my one in, one out rule in my closet. I especially love to replace worn out pieces of clothing with high quality pieces that I know I will love for the long haul. On the Quince website, I searched for wide leg pants to have something cool and comfy for summer travel. And I found the perfect navy pair in European linen that were less than $40. That's really the best part. Quince items are all priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands, and they partner directly with top factories. Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. I love that. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/clean for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/clean to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/clean. I am so excited about my new digital picture frame from Aura. It is beautiful and it solves clutter problems. One frame that rotates, so it lets me display lots of photos. There's a new photo every 10 minutes. I am seriously delighted every time I walk by my beautiful Aura frame. Mom, I hope you're not listening, because you are also getting an Aura frame for Mother's Day. I am going to customize the gift by preloading photos onto the frame. There's a super simple app that I can share with the whole family so they can add photos to my mom's frame too, anytime from wherever they are around the globe. I used the Aura app and I had everything set up for my frame in 2 minutes. You can upload an unlimited number of photos, invite others to share photos directly to your frame with no fees or memberships. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AURAframes.com. Use code CLEAN at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. It's a little bit scary to send your kids out on their own into the big wide world. As mine head into their next adventures, I definitely think through whether I've prepared them for all the things that are going to come their way. Do they know how to manage money? Do they know how to budget? What about investing for the future? Greenlight can help your children get ready. Their debit card and money app is made for families. With instant money transfers, you can send your kid a recurring allowance to their Greenlight debit card. It truly is so easy to use and customize to fit your family's needs. It's great to have someone else backing up mom and dad when it comes to the money talk. And Greenlight plays that role. Your kids will be able to build financial literacy and independence by learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. The Greenlight app also comes with a game that teaches financial literacy. Level Up helps kids build money confidence through videos, challenges, mini games, and more. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free
free at greenlight.com/clean. That's greenlight.com/clean to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/clean.
So it's getting started with the easy stuff, which our first step in decluttering, in my decluttering process, is trash. That's the easiest of the easy stuff. It's decision free. So is that how you define easy? Like, how do you define easy in these things? When people are trying to say, this is my situation, you tell me to set an easy goal, but everything feels hard. Like, literally, I'm so overwhelmed. I can't identify the easy.
Well, I mean, so in situations like that, I always tell people, like, well, don't try to do it alone then. If you're that stuck, you can't, you know, do one thing, don't try to do it alone. Maybe your first step is to find a friend to say, hey, I'm really stuck. I need, you know, community in this. Like, it needs to be bigger than me. I've tried me every way possible and it's not working. So I want to try something else. So, I mean, for me though, an easy goal, I always say it can, like, one of the signs is it can be accomplished in 1 to 7 days. Like, and it takes 1 to 7. So if you say for the next 30 days, I'm going to do this every day, that's not an easy goal. That, like, you've now just given yourself 30 different goals. That's not easy. You can't actually do that. Like, it's going to be really difficult for you to accomplish that. So an easy goal, 1 to 7 days, has obvious first steps. It's not confusing. So the trash example, there's obvious steps. It's not, you don't have to make decisions and go, well, where will I donate this? Where will I, you know, it's the step is the trash can, I'm assuming. And then it's not expensive. So there's not a cost kind of standing between you and the goal. It matches your current schedule. That's another thing with easy goals, is you have to be able to fit it into your life. So a lot of times people mess up on their goals because they'll say, John, I'm gonna run 5 times this week, or I'm gonna do, you know, 5 hours on my book. And they never look at their current schedule and realize they have 30 minutes available. Like, they have 2 twin 4-year-olds, a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old. They're running, you know, they work full time. There's all these, they don't have the time. So it immediately fails because it doesn't match their current schedule. An easy goal should never force you to radically change your schedule, because that's really challenging. Yeah. So that, you know, and then I love this example from this book Streaking that said, it should feel like it's not enough. Like, you know, you've got a good, easy goal when you tell friends and they go, is that all? Like, when it should be so small that when you tell a friend, they're not impressed. And you go, my goal is to throw away, you know, a Ziploc bag full of receipts that are on my desk. And like, and you go, I'm pretty proud of myself. And they should be like, what, really? Is that all? Like, great. That means
okay.
It's easy.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think that is part of the issue. I do want to say first, like, one of the things we've talked about a lot around here is this whole idea of, I don't believe that consistency is a good goal, because you can't achieve consistency today, where I can achieve. And so, like, that's this whole idea of choose something easy to get started, because there's this, it's so daunting to think all I have to do is just be consistent, but that's going to take me 30 days.
Yeah, I can't do that today. That's a
100%. Yeah, I've never gotten there before. Yeah. Like, I've never done this. I've never been successful at being consistent. And so then it becomes too overwhelming, where it's like, the goal is not to be consistent. The goal is to do something right now. And then that inspires me to do something tomorrow. And then I achieve consistency.
Yeah, I love that.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's talk though about other people's perspectives. Cause a lot of what you talk about, you're very inspiring on business building and things like that. I mean, that's how, you know, I've followed you for years. So how do you, in that, and you don't have to talk about decluttering necessarily, because I, you know, totally know what people experience and their friends being like, no, this is how you have to declutter. And I'm like, well, that's not what I teach, you know, and that's not what my people follow. They follow my 5-step process. And so sometimes the struggle is, I know this works because I'm experiencing success. And then the outside person says, oh, well, that's not enough. Like, shouldn't you be doing this, this, and this, that they have learned in theory? Okay. These other people have learned it in theory, or they've, you know, used their logic to figure out what I would do, you know, because what I would do, that's real helpful, right? Versus what is actually working for them. So how do you encourage people in those situations where they're frustrated that the people they wish were impressed and excited for them are telling them they should be doing something more than what they're doing here in these beginning stages?
Yeah. I mean, I always remind myself that no one should be as excited about my goal as me. Like, I'm the most excited person. So I can't hold a single other person to my level of excitement because it's my goal. So if I go to a friend going, I need you to match my excitement at 100% for this, I've already failed. Like, I'm doomed because they have their own life. They have their own challenges, their own things they're working on. So what, number one, I don't expect a friend to match my yes. level of excitement. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I try to find my own scorecard for what matters to me. If I let somebody else go, hey, I saw a documentary on decluttering, so I'm kind of an expert now, or I saw a business, like I heard this guy on Instagram say you got to work 80 hours a week and you don't do that, and so you're doing it wrong. Like, I have to live my life by my scorecard. And so for me, and it only gets easier and easier to do as I accomplish things. If somebody said to me, well, you're writing books the wrong way, I'd say, well, I've written 9 and it's been helped. The way I do it is helpful to me. So I'm going to keep doing it that way. I can certainly improve. I can get title feedback. There's certainly ways I can make my approach better, but I'm doing it the way I know how to do it. And it's productive. Like, I can see results. And then the other thing is, like, this hit me recently. This is such a silly example. I saw this influencer that was like, you got to drink a gallon of water. You got to drink a gallon of water a day. So I tried that for a couple of days and I felt sick. Like, I was like, it was all I was doing. My productivity actually went down because I was going to the bathroom so many times a day. And I had to leave meetings that were important to go, hey, I'm so sorry, but I've got to go use the bathroom. Like, I would have been on stage at an event and needed to go to the bathroom. I came to find out later, the influencer that suggested that weighs 150 pounds more than me. He has physical body needs that are different than mine. That would be like if somebody 6'8" said, John, this is the size pants you have to wear if you want to be successful. And I was like, I guess I just got to get longer pants. So I'm always trying to go, how do I modify what this person said to what I know about my strengths, my challenges, my life? Because if I get into this spot where I'm comparing to their scorecard, like, I'm doomed. And it's so easy to slip into. And this the water story is like 2 weeks old. It's not like I've learned this lesson and I'm on a mountain somewhere with wisdom. I'm constantly learning of the same lessons again and again. But I try to have my own scorecard and go, this is what matters. Like, another example would be like, if a 28-year-old who's single and not married and has no kids tells me how many times a year I should do speaking engagements, they don't have 2 teenage daughters they're trying to raise, and they don't have a wife they're trying to be present to and love. And like, so their standard of time is radically different from my standard of time. I can still learn from them, but I'm not going to expect them to understand how I'm doing what I do. And I can't take their feedback as this is the gospel.
Right. Well, and I think too, in your answer there, which I agree, I'm always like, listen, you're the one watching some lady talk about this on the internet. Like, they're not as into it as you are. They're not paying as much attention. But what you said was not an attempt to win an argument, because that's not helpful, right? Your goal is to declutter. It's not to prove that the way that you're decluttering is the very best way in the whole world. Your goal is to get the thing done. And so all you have to worry about is, how does what they're saying affect me getting my goal done, as opposed to how can I convince them that what I'm doing is right? So I like what you said about, this is what I'm doing. These are the results I've seen. That's why I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. And your goal. Yeah, you're right. You're 100% right. Your goal isn't they declutter their house. Your goal is you feel peace in your life because you've gone through this process. Like, their success isn't your, it'd be great if they did, like, be awesome. Like, I'm sure there are so many relationships that have been strengthened from your advice as people do this together. I think that can be amazing, but you're right. That's your goal is, okay, I'm decluttering for my own sense of peace, for my own, whatever your goal is there. It's not somebody else's.
Yeah. Okay. Let's specifically talk about regret, since that's in your title.
Sure.
Fear of regret. How do past regrets hold you back from tackling the next goal? How does a fear of regret, a fear of making a wrong decision, you know, just let's talk about regret.
Yeah. I mean, I think that a really easy way to say, here's how regret holds you back, is when past regrets get current time and energy and creativity. So a thing that happened 10 years ago is the star of today. And maybe there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, there's different situations in life where a relationship there's been, you know, an apology. It's been as repaired as it can be. And there's not going to be resolution in the sense of you're going to be as close as you used to be. Like the, you know, the marriage ended, like, and there's not going to be a sense of, okay, but I want it to be exactly like it used to be. So I think sometimes you get stuck in regret when you're using your best time, your best creativity, your best imagination, your best whatever to live in a moment that no longer really exists. And you haven't processed it. You haven't learned from it. You're trying to, you know, fix something that can't be fixed. And there's no end to that. That's the challenge with regret, is there's no natural conclusion. Regret will take every bit of time, energy. Regret will never tell you you're done. Regret will never go, hey, you know what? You know what? I think we did it. Like, we regret it enough. Regret it will always go, no, let's go more. So for me, a big part of regret is to say, okay, what did I learn from it? Like, what could I do differently? Have I processed the feelings? Like, not just stuff them down. Like, have I processed them? And you can do that a number of different ways. You can do that with a friend. You can do that with a therapist. I went and saw my counselor yesterday. Like, mm-hmm. I talk about regret in some of my counseling sessions. And it's funny, men have a hard time with counseling sometimes. But if you say performance coach, they're like, oh yeah, yeah, totally. Like performance coach. Like they get, and it's funny that we're like, professional athletes now, the top ones all have performance coaches. They all have mindset coaches. Like Steph Curry doesn't just work on his shot. He works on his mindset, because so much of what he does, field goal kickers have mindset coaches, because it's not the kicking that's hard. It's the stepping up with 1 second left on the clock and the fans, you know. And so for me, there's just a lot of ways that I actively work on dealing with regret. And a simple way to start would be to just write it out. Regret's really big in your head. It gets really small on paper. Like one of the soundtracks I say is that paper shrinks regret. Because then if I can actually put it down on paper and it doesn't have to be fancy or well-written, I can see what I'm really thinking about, versus in my head, it feels massive and tangled and confusing. And so a simple way to kind of declutter your mind is, okay, I'm going to write 50 words about how I feel about this thing. And I'm going to actually, you know, see if there's something for me to learn. So yeah, but that's how I look at regret, is that it's never done. You have to be the one who declare it's done. And usually it doesn't happen just one time. There's certain regrets that I have to let go of, like as an experience, not an event. Like where I go, I don't go, oh yeah, I've done that, I'm done with that regret. Like it tends to come back up a week later or a month later, or sometimes even a year later, and go, hey, just wanted to see if you wanted to, you seem like you're too happy right now. I'd like to bring that back down to something, you know, another level. You're like, whoa, I've already dealt with that. No.
Do you have an example you can give us of a regret that dealing with it was the thing that helped you move on?
Yeah. So a specific example from my own life, I had a job and I was just not a good employee. Like I was really not a good employee. I was young, I was immature, but I just didn't do my best. I didn't leave on the best terms. I think they were honestly glad to see me go when I got a different job. And about a year later, I wrote my boss and my boss's boss an apology email. I didn't have their phone numbers. We weren't that close, but so I wrote both of them an apology email and said, hey, you know, cause I was regretting their experience with me as a writer, their experience with me as an employee, their experience with me as a person. I had made their jobs harder. I had complicated their days with my, you know, sarcastic, belligerent attitude. And so one of the people wrote back and said, hey, you know what? That was a crazy environment for all of us. I really appreciate you taking the time to do that. And the other person said, yeah, I don't know what your problem was. You were terrible. Like she just like heaped it on. But the purpose of it wasn't for me to get them to say something back to me. The purpose was for me to express the apology. You don't control the response. You control your actions. And so both of them they both got to do that. And I received both and said, okay. But that's one where I no longer look back on that. And this was 15 years ago and go, man, I wasn't a good employee at that company. Cause I've resolved that to the best of my abilities to resolve. I can't go back and be a better employee. Like it's 15 years ago. Like that thing doesn't exist anymore. But especially relationally, I can own the things I did wrong in that moment. And then I get to sleep better knowing, okay, I've apologized to the two people that 100% deserved apologies.
Okay. No, that's good. It's the acknowledging. I'm really big on, I'm not going to promise you there's not going to be these feelings. These feelings are going to happen, right? Yeah. Like they are. And so I like the idea of writing it out.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So what about not being able to move forward because you fear regret?
Future
you fear
regret. Yeah.
Experiencing that in the future.
Potential regret is really tricky because it's not a great way to live your life. And I've done that before where I'll make a decision based on the smallest amount of regret I'll feel if it goes wrong versus the biggest joy I'll get if it goes right. So you kind of have to sit there and go, okay,
can you say that again? I'm sorry. Can you say that one more time? I liked that.
Yeah. So making your decisions based not on the smallest amount of regret you'll feel if it goes wrong, but on the biggest amount of joy you'll get if it goes right. And that there's fear involved in that. There just is. And so like the way I think about that is I never got a single one-star review until I wrote books. When I worked at any company, even companies that, again, I didn't do a good job at, I didn't have public one-star reviews. Nobody, there was never a website that would say, you'd go in and say, John Acuff's a bad copywriter. I didn't like the way he wrote that advertising for Home Depot. He sucks. Like I never had there was only one-star reviews in my life when I dared to write a book. But for me, the joy of writing that book was so much bigger than the regret of a possible one-star review. And also, who says I have to read one-star reviews? There's no rules that say that. Like, I don't read one star. Why would I read one star reviews? Like, no, I don't need that. And so for me, that's an example of where I've tried in my life to go, what's the joy versus what's the possibility of regret? Because what fear does is fear asks you to fix fictional problems. Fear is always going, like growing my team. I have a small team. And when I started this business, I was like, man, I want to expand, but I don't want to have to fire somebody. The person didn't even exist yet. I hadn't even hired the person yet. And fear was going, what if in like 4 years you have to fire them and it's like Christmas and they have a family and like, man, that's going to, and they maybe they have a farm too, and they're going to lose their farm when you fire, like, what? That's a fictional problem. So I often have to tell myself in moments like that, wait a second. Am I trying to fix a fictional problem with my factual time? Like right now, I got real time that I'm giving to something that hasn't happened yet, it's not guaranteed to happen. It's a long way from happening. So why am I trying to like, and then the other thing with that is you'll be a different person by the time that thing happens, even if it does happen. Like say I write a book next year and it doesn't get good reviews, that's next year, John's issue. I'll be ready to handle that even better because I'm going to keep growing. Like I'll have another year of growth under my belt when that happens. So I look at you and go, okay, 9 years of podcasting, you handle challenges now with your podcast that would have been really hard year one. They would have been but guess what? Your podcast year nine person, that person's like, oh, okay. Like, let's go. Like the joy that I get from this is bigger than it's ever been. And I've got 9 years of expertise in this so I can handle it. So I think that's what I think of is the joy going to be big if I win and producing a book, it's huge joy. Now there's regret, there's sadness. There's heartache in it, of course, but it's smaller than the joy. I'll make that trade. Like yes. I'll stare at the joy versus the regret. And I have to tell myself that it's not like I'm a very negative, pessimistic, cynical person by nature, like very, but I work really hard at positivity because I've tried positivity and I've tried negativity and the ROI, the return on investment for positivity is so much better. Like yes. It's so much. So I wake up so many mornings where I have to, today I posted it that rejoice is a choice. I'm going to work on that today. Like not go, how do I feel today? Because a lot of days I don't feel like that. I go, no, I'm going to choose that. And sometimes I have to choose it 1,000 times a day. Sometimes I have to choose it 10, but it's part of my process.
Yeah. Yes. It's that you might have to replace this item. I'm not going to pretend like you are not going to regret getting rid of this. However, the money that you're going to spend on that, count that as what you're paying for this space to be decluttered between now and then.
And would you pay
most
that
likely
for peace?
You'll never have to pay that money.
Yeah. Would you pay that for peace? Like if you had to replace a $12 item, that's not fun. Would you pay $12 for the amount of peace you're going to experience from this experience? And most people would go, yeah, it's a pretty good deal for peace. Yeah. I mean, peace is only $12. That's a pretty good price.
I'll pay that. Decluttered space. I mean, because most people would absolutely say, I would give somebody a $100 bill right now if they would make this space be decluttered. Yeah. So there you go. I do have to tell you my philosophy on 1-star reviews.
Yeah, let's hear it.
I think they're great because that's what people read. Let's just be honest. And if they are actually well-written, like purposeful reviews, then they reveal a lot about the book and they actually help me find my target audience. So for me, my 1-star reviews are things like, I can't believe somebody needed to be told to start with the trash. Like, are there really people out there who don't know that that's where you have to start? Like, how do people not? And I'm like, you know what? That's what people are going to read. And they're going to go, okay, this book is for me. I mean, like,
Yeah. That's a good point.
So that's how I twist that, because I do read them all. I just have to. I do think very unkind thoughts about the people who leave the one-star reviews. Yeah. So
no, for me, I just know, like, that's a living, like, in the moment example of modify what works for you. So for me, the time I spend out on those 1-star reviews isn't worth the value I get from the person who gave me feedback, because I have other people that give me feedback. So it's not that I'm in a vacuum and don't get enough feedback and I need to go find, like, Gary who said something about the book. So for me, like, no, I just, in the number of years I've done it, I'm like, nah, it's not worth the trade-off. The time I'll spend thinking about that person and going, man, I wish I could win that person over. Like, I'll just go down a rabbit hole. But I like 3-star reviews, because for me, a 3-star review a lot of times is like, okay, this would have made it a 5. If it was a 5, this would have made it a little better. So sometimes
Gives real information. Like a 3-star review generally gives real information. But if they give a reason why, I feel like, well, then that just kind of weeds out the people who don't need it, and then the people who desperately need it and think nothing can ever solve their problems. Yeah. You know. So that's
how often do you read your reviews?
You know, I don't as much as I used to. Yeah. But I mean, on a fairly regular basis. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm like 1-star reviews. I'll read some of my podcast reviews because it's new. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's 2 years old, but it's new in the sense of podcasting, and that I find helpful. And so I did read a 1-star review where they were like, man, John did not get engaged with this guest, and they were right. It was just like, we didn't connect, and they were and they listed some specific things that I was like, I could do that better. And so it was like, for me, that one was helpful.
Yeah. But at the same time, you put it out there, you did the thing, you got the negative feedback, which nobody wants. That was the risk. That was the fear of regret. That's the fear of regret that a lot of people have in ever even doing this or ever even getting started. But only because you did the thing and then experienced that, are you then ready to do even better in the future, you know? I mean, like, so that it all works together. It's all that experience, that momentum that we gain. So I do have to tell you, because it's on my notes and I was going to say it at the beginning, but my thanks to you is that back in, it was probably 2010, maybe, I don't even know. Were you blogging in 2010?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I started in 2009 and you were the first blogger that my husband read.
Oh, nice.
And it made him like, oh, okay, now I understand what you're doing. I mean, like,
That's great. Yeah, I love that.
Kind of like, I'm super into it. And I'm like, you know, having interactions and stuff. And it's, I mean, he's very supportive. He's always been wonderfully supportive. But he finally understood it when he started reading your blog and looking forward to it every day and all that. So,
oh, that's so great. I love it. Well, it was a weird thing to try to describe, like, in 2009, to say, like, no, there's And there's these people that I don't know, but we're becoming friends, like, and they have nicknames and like, yeah, it was same with podcasting. I mean, when you've done this for 9 years, when you started, you had to explain it to people. I started 2 years ago. I didn't have to like, people knew what a podcast was at that point. I've never had to explain the concept of a podcast in the last 2 years. You probably did when you first started.
I'm still amazed at how many people don't know, but
really. For me, I sell 3 times as many audiobooks as I do digital now because of podcasts. I think podcasts have taught so many people you can learn about interesting topics via audio. And now, like, it's never for the last book, that was the experience. And that hasn't been the experience on any other book. Audio, I think, is such a fun way to learn.
It is. And I know I get in my little world and I think that everybody knows it. And then I have these conversations with people in my regular life who... Of course, I mean, I live in a small town, you know, yeah. I mean, which I'm not going to say there's a lot, plenty of super, sure. You know, with it people in small towns, but it's amazing to me how many people still have no idea what I do, which I'm actually glad because I don't like to talk about it on a
We have weird jobs. You and I have weird jobs. Like super that's weird. Just the reality of it. Like it's weird. Like it's, I love it. I wouldn't trade it for the world, but it is weird.
So as we finish up here, I want you to tell me the most pivotal mindset shift that you have had in your goal reaching. I mean, you have a long career that's gone from blogging to other things, to speaking, to book writing. It sounds like book writing is your favorite thing and how you kind of identify yourself. Would you say that?
Yeah, I would. I mean, it's neck and neck with speaking. Like I love being on stage, but the books feed that and vice versa.
So what's the biggest mindset shift, if you had to narrow it down to one thing, that you say, when I changed this about how I was thinking on this goal that I had of speaking and writing, that I can look back and say that's when things started to really change?
Yeah, so I would say it was when I read in A War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. A friend gave me a copy of it probably 15, 16 years ago. The basic premise was that fear isn't a sign to stop. It's a sign to keep going because it only bothers you when you're doing something that you really care about. And that for me shifted my mindset about fear. Instead of going, I'm afraid of writing, so I shouldn't write, or I'm afraid of sharing ideas, so I shouldn't share them. That's a sign, like the fear is a sign I shouldn't do it. And switching it to, oh, wait a second. No, that's actually a really interesting early indicator that I care about something. And I should lean into that and explore that. And then it turned fear into from a stop sign into like a lighthouse that was like, look over here. Like there might be something really cool here. You seem a little afraid of it. What if there's something cool here? That was a huge change for me. And again, Stephen Pressfield, War of Art, wasn't an idea like I came up with or stumbled on. Like that was an idea that just really took a hold of my heart and changed how I think.
I love that. That's great. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, this is a blast. This is super easy.
Tell us about the book and where to find you online.
The book is called All It Takes Is a Goal. It's available everywhere books are sold. I read the audio and there's a ton of bonus content in it. That's something we discovered a couple books ago that like you should put so much fun bonus audio stuff in your books. And so there's a lot of backstory. There's a lot of riffing that's only on the audio, which is fun. And then I'm at... acuff.me and acuff.me/goals. And then my podcast is called All It Takes Is a Goal.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate you having me.
Okay. Didn't you love that conversation? He is a really fun follow on social media. He's got a great mix of practical stuff with also being really, really genuinely funny and nice. Like he's nice. Anyway. Okay. 3 quick reminders. If you think you might be a great fit for our virtual office manager position, go to aslobcomesclean.com/hiring, H-I-R-I-N-G, okay? If you want to grab Take Your House Back while it's on sale, go to aslobcomesclean.com/take. And if you want to enter the giveaway celebrating 10 years of this podcast, go to aslobcomesclean.com/10 years. Okay, I'll talk to y'all next week. Bye.